Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico. Got another great show for you tonight as we're getting a little bit closer to the end of the year, already the 12th of November, so we're getting very close to the holiday. First upcoming, of course, in another week or so is going to be Thanksgiving, and I know we're all looking forward to that. I know I am. And then it's really only a few short weeks after that, and then Christmas will be here before we know it, and then, of course, New Year's. But glad you tuned into the show. Got a great show, as I said, for you tonight. A little bit different. Tonight we're not going to have Coach's Corner. The panel's on a break this week. Some of the panelists, unfortunately, weren't able to commit to this evening, so we decided to take a little break rather than trying to get some last-minute recruits in. So I'm going to go over 10 ways, really tips, if you will, to save your golf game this winter. We're going to talk about that here in just a second. And then a little bit later in the broadcast, I'm going to be joined, and in about 30 minutes or so, I'm going to be joined by a really good friend of mine, Brian Dobby. He's the PGA Teacher Professional up at the Montclair Golf Club up in New Jersey. He's going to be joining me here in a little bit. But let me just remind everybody, of course, obviously if you're tuning in, you've got the time and dates, everything that memorized. But for those of you that may be tuning in the first time, let me just remind you, of course, the show is live every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, or 7 to 9 for those of you on the East Coast. The best way to find us is go to blogtalkradio.com, and up in the search key, if you type in Golf Talk Live, that will take you to the main page. Now, on the main page, of course, during the live broadcast, the current show, which is what you're listening to right now, is always, pardon me, up at the top of the page. But for some reason, if you're not able to listen into the live broadcast, that's not a problem. All of the shows, of course, as I've always mentioned before, are auto-recorded. So if you can't tune in live, not a problem. You can listen to the recorded version a little bit later on. And again, the best way to do that is go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive, or just type Golf Talk Live up in the search key up top, and that'll take you to the home page. And then all you have to do is just scroll down to where it says On Demand. And in the On Demand section, of course, is all of the programs that have been previously aired, including the most recent. And it starts the most recent and then on its way down through the list. So you can listen to them there at your convenience. But again, thank you for tuning in. If you are joining us live tonight, always appreciate that. And if any time during the shows, if you'd like to call in and either speak to myself or any of the guests, you're more than welcome to do so. The number to call is 646-716-4667. The number again is 646-716-4667. Or you're always welcome to email any questions or comments about the show to ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And if you're somebody in the golf industry, whether you're a teach professional, PGA, LPGA, USGTF, doesn't really matter. If you want to come on the program, or you're somebody in the golf industry, maybe a different part of the business, maybe you've got a great product that you'd like to share with the audience. I know that my audience always likes to see what's new and exciting out there in the market. So if you've got something that you'd like to share with my audience, by all means, you can reach me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com as well. And as most of you know by now, that if you've been listening to the program for any length of time, you know that I update the program on social media, primarily through Facebook and Twitter, of course, and also through LinkedIn. You can follow the show on facebook.com/golftalklive blog. Make sure you have blog on the end there. And while you're at the page, if you haven't done so already, appreciate it if you like the page while you're there. And you're welcome to message me through that page as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ted and Buck CEO. That's Ted and Buck and CEO, of course, in capital letters. And again, thank you for all of the new followers there, and you're welcome to follow me there as well. I update each week the shows, both Golf Talk Live, and of course, most of you know that I also co-host with Cindy Miller another show on Tuesday mornings from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time for an hour called The Women of Golf. And Cindy and I have been doing that now for a couple of years, and had some the fortune, if you will, of interviewing some great LPGA players, as well as some of the juniors off of the Symetra Tour. Those are up-and-coming players, and also some great business people in the golf industry as well. We had a great time talking with them, and we're going to continue to do that here as we close out the year and into the new year. Of course, we've got some great guests coming up here in the weeks to come. But thanks for tuning in. And on, for that one as well, just to refresh your memory, if you go to blogtalkradio.com, Golf Talk Live, to get this program on Thursdays from 6 to 8 Central, and on Tuesday mornings from 9 to 10 Eastern, blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf, and that will take you to the program that Cindy Miller and I, LPGA professional Cindy Miller and I, co-host together on that on Tuesday mornings. But thank you very much for tuning into the broadcast. And as I mentioned, I'm going to start off here with really 10 ways to save your golf game this winter. And then, as I said a little bit later, Brian Dobby from the Montclair Golf Club in New Jersey is going to be joining me here for some discussion. It's been a little while since he's been on the program, so we're going to have him back on. One of the reasons, and I know I've talked about this a little bit here lately, we've talked about as the season, for some anyways, particularly up in the Northeast and up in Canada, of course, which most of you know by now, that's where I'm originally from, it gets a little cold in the winter. And it's not always convenient, of course, to work on your golf game, primarily because you have to shovel about a foot of snow off of most of the golf courses in the winter months. But that doesn't mean you have to stop working on your game. We've talked a little bit about some of the things that you can do, both indoors and even outdoors in some cases, depending on the circumstances. But I'm going to talk about 10 ways that you can help really save your golf game this winter. And then when Brian joins me in a little while, I know that he wants to talk a little bit about that. So we'll see if he and I are on kind of the same page, or maybe he's got a few other tips that he can share with you as well. And one of the interesting things, too, just let me point this out before we get started. One of the interesting things about this program is it's not just the average high handicap golfer that tunes into the show. There's a lot of great people in both the PGA and LPGA and other organizations around the world in golf that tune into the show. So this is a great show to tune into if you certainly want to learn a little bit more about golf. But if you're somebody that's seasoned and experienced, it's a great way to hear some of your fellow professionals, whether you be a teacher or coach or both, share some of their ideas and thoughts. And it's a great way to exchange information. And actually quite a few people on the show that have been on as guests have actually carried those relationships outside of the program that had never met before. I remember a few weeks ago, I had two great guys on the show that have been on many, many times. A great professional from up in the Carolinas, Clint Wright, and of course, another good friend down in Orlando area, PJ Master Professional, John Hughes, have both been on the program. They, I don't believe, had actually ever met before, may have conversed here and there, but I know that they were going to try and connect outside of the show. So this is a great way for a lot of the professionals out there that maybe haven't worked with somebody else outside of their area. Might be a great way to connect and share some of your ideas. So trying to help everybody in the business, not just the high handicappers out there, but also those in the profession. And that's really the main reason why I do this program. Okay, so let's start with 10 ways to save your golf game this winter. Now, number one, and again, these are, let me just rephrase this, they're not in any particular order, so you don't have to necessarily do them in a specific order, but these are just what I've sort of jotted down, and these are other people as well have put these up as some of their 10 ways to help those golfers transitioning into the winter months. And as I said a few moments ago, most of the people that I'm really targeting here, of course, are those that are going to be going into cooler climates Those of you that obviously migrate down south here in the winter months, you're able to play pretty much all the way through the winter. But these are some good tips as well that you can do if you're not getting a chance out some week, whether the weather's bad or something. So these are some things that you can work on, even if you're down here in Florida or some of the other southern states as well through the winter months. So let's start with the first one. Number one is hit the weights. Now, I know we talked about this, I guess it was probably about 2 weeks ago, I think, when Jamie Zimron was on the show, and we talked about weights a little bit. Now, let me define what I'm talking about, weight training. One of the things that you want to do, Bob Foreman, who's been on the show, who is a certified fitness professional, has talked about this area as well, as strengthening the glutes and really maintaining your core. Now, when I talk about hitting the weights, I'm not talking about getting into a serious weight routine where you're just piling on weight after weight and trying to bulk up. That's really the last thing you want to do if you want to be successful in playing golf. But you do have to have some weight training. You want to strengthen the glutes, which, of course, is your butt muscles. And, yes, there are muscles in that area, believe it or not, and also your core. And one of the reasons why is really the golf swing is really built around the core. If you have very weak core muscles, more often than not, you're going to have a lot of other problems. So just to give you an example, keeping those areas in good shape, there's lots of great programs. I'm not going to give you a specific program. I think you have to go and really seek out. There's a lot of great areas that you can go to. A lot of the teacher professionals now have linked up either with fitness professionals as well, or some of them are also fitness trainers. In addition to that, you may want to talk to them and have them put together a good fitness program for you. But other than that, go to your local gym and speak to some of the fitness trainers there and just explain to them that, you know, you're a golfer, you want to work on some of the areas, your glutes and your core area, and they'll put together a appropriate routine for you. And again, you don't have to go crazy with this. One of the biggest mistakes I see is, especially guys, I think you can relate to this more so than the ladies, but they get in there and they get to this heavy, heavy fitness, you know, weight training program, and actually it's counterintuitive to playing good golf. If you get too bulked up, it really restricts a lot of your movements in order to have that good transition in the golf swing. So I just recommend that you use some weights. Nothing really, really heavy, just some light weights, but you want to focus, again, on those areas, the glutes, and in your core areas where the primary areas, and certainly want to do some arm and leg training as well, but keep it a little bit lighter. But work on your glutes and your core area is what I would suggest. Number two, improving your mental game. You've heard me talk about this. You've heard many of the guests that have been on here, and if those of you that have listened to both this program and the Women of Golf show with Cindy Miller and I, you know that earlier in the year we talked about Cindy brought a great program that she utilizes that really focuses on the mental game. And in fact, it's such an important area of golf that come January, sometime in the new year, we're going to go through that whole program again on the Women of Golf show. And I think I'm going to do it on this program as well, just to make sure we got all the bases covered. Because it's certainly not just applicable to the ladies, it's applicable really to everybody. But improving your mental game. Anyone who's picked up a golf club knows the mental aspect of golf is just as important as the physical. One of the things that you want to be able to do is you want to be able to take a deep breath and relax and visualize shots in your head. And that takes a lot of mental, really stamina. Developing a pre-shot routine for every shot will certainly help you to lower scores. And that adds to the mental side of it as well. And it's not just, I know some people don't like to use the word mental game. They want to use other words and phrases and things like that. You know, whatever you want to call it, that's up to you. But really, it all boils down to the mental side of things and how you handle different situations. And there's ways and drills that you can do. And again, I would strongly suggest that you work with somebody that can help you in that area. Go to one of your local teaching professionals if you're not already working with somebody and explain to them not only that you want to get a little better fit, but you also want to improve the mental side. And they'll work out some drills and some different techniques that you can use to really tighten up your mental game as well. So that's something that you want to do is improve your mental game. And that's something that you can do. You don't need to be playing on the golf course necessarily. There's things that drills and tips and ideas that can be suggested to you through your local teaching professional that can help you work on that area. And believe it or not, there's even things outside of golf. Somebody actually mentioned to me a long, long time ago that they love doing crossword puzzles. And people might think, well, what does crossword puzzles have to do with golf? Well, really nothing. But what it does, it keeps you mentally sharp. And the sharper that you are mentally, the better you're going to be. And there's a lot of different games. There's games out there that you can think golf. For instance, Cindy and I talked about this this past Tuesday. It's a great organization. Go to thinkgolf.com, and it's T-H-I-N-Q, not K, golf.com. And there's some great ways that you can help sharpen your mental game. So visit that website as well. But you need to sharpen your mental game if you want to play some better golf, because that's really, as Jack Nicklaus used to say, was really the bigger area of his golf game where his strengths were. It wasn't really his physical game as much as it was his mental game, and that's why he won as many majors as he did and went on to be, in my opinion, if not the best, one of the best players in the world. Now, something else, too, that some of you may not have gravitated to yet, but yoga. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not proliferant in yoga. I certainly can do some of the movements. I'm still working on some. But Catherine Roberts, of course, has been on the show, Yoga for Golfers. We talked about that. Hers is a great program. And I would certainly visit her website, yogaforgolfers.com, or you can even just Google Catherine Roberts, who's been on many, many times on the Golf Channel. Through the different programs, and she's been on my program as well, both here on Golf Talk Live and also on the Women of Golf with Cindy and I. But there are some great things. Both yoga and even Pilates really help with the flexibility and core stability, in addition to lengthening muscles, which help give you a good wide range of motion. And really, that is extremely important in your flexibility. As you improve your flexibility and range of motion, you'll be able to take a fuller, more robust swing. And again, flexibility and strength exercise for, especially for senior golfers out there, for those of you getting, late 50s, early 60s and beyond, as you age, of course, your body has more flexibility restrictions. So yoga has really been proven, not just in golf, but in a lot of areas, has proven to be very, very effective in those areas of flexibility and even strength and stability. So I would strongly recommend that you either go to Yoga for Golfers, which is, again, Catherine Roberts' website, or if your local gym or local club that you belong to offers yoga classes. Guys, it's not a girl thing. It's an everybody thing. Yoga is a great way to work through some of the stability issues and can really help in that area. And I guarantee you, anybody that I've ever talked to that's really given yoga some serious attention has seen very, very substantial increases in their flexibility and their stability, which ultimately transition into their golf game. So it does work. It's not a myth. Some people may not understand it. That's why you want to seek out a professional. Don't just rent a video and start doing the poses yourself. I would strongly recommend that you reach out to somebody that specializes in yoga. And again, explain to them what you want to do with it. You want, as a golfer, you want to be able to work on your core and your flexibility and stability in your body. And they'll be able to, again, help you with some of the movements and things like that. And it takes a while. I'll be honest, it takes a while. I'm 6'4", and I'm most of my length, of course, I might have mentioned before, is in my legs. So some of the movements can be a little challenging for me, but there's ways that, I don't want to use the word cheat, but there's ways that you can help. They have yoga blocks, which sort of help balance things out, and you'll understand what those are once you get going on it. But there's ways that you can accommodate and make adjustments to be able to do the movements a little easier. And as I said, I'm still learning when it comes to yoga, but I'm already starting to see some of the benefits here from working through the different movements and so forth. So yoga is number three. The other thing, too, again, this goes to weight, swinging weighted clubs. Now, this is something that's been around for a long, long time. Working with weighted clubs is a way to improve the timing and mechanics of your swing. Your body's motor memory is enhanced when swinging with a heavier club, so it's easier for your muscles to remember how to swing correctly. You'll also feel the movement, the moment of impact better, which helps develop consistent timing. Now, let me just caution you with this, with a weighted club. A lot of times you've seen Gary Player did this where he would actually grab sometimes two or three clubs and start swinging. This is, again, an area, especially for some of your older golfers that don't spend a lot of time exercising. There's a lot of great weighted clubs. Medicus offers some weighted clubs. Other suppliers in the golf industry, have some weighted clubs as well. Don't sit there and manufacture your own by putting something heavy on the end of an existing club or trying to swing two or three different clubs without doing some proper stretching at first, especially if your muscles have not been warmed up. Warm them up first before you start doing that. The reason why is you have to protect your back. Your back is the one area that once you sort of start to have some difficulties or problems with that, it can take a long time to recover, and you can end up having reoccurring issues as well. So make sure that you kind of warm those muscles up, do some good stretches and some good movement. Again, yoga is good and different stretches and poses that you can do. Warm those back muscles up particularly, and then get out that weighted club and swing. Again, you're not trying to swing at full momentum. You're just trying to swing just to kind of help loosen up the muscles and just feel the fluidity of your swing, if you will. So swinging weighted clubs is a great way to do it. Another way which is actually number five in our list, is practicing in the mirror. Now, I've mentioned this. I've done this for years. I still do it. I've got full-length mirrors at my place, and I'm not just saying it because I'm conceding. I like looking at myself, but I practice in the mirror all the time because especially doing what I do every day and busy, my schedule sometimes gets very, very busy. I don't always have a chance to get out to the golf course and play, or even sometimes even to the range and work on my game as much as I would like to these days. So sometimes what I will do is I'll work on the different positions in the mirror. As an example, you want to take several super slow motion swings while maintaining your balance throughout the entire motion. Try to correlate what you're feeling with what you see in the mirror and make adjustments accordingly. One of the things that I would also suggest that you do when you're doing this is practice your full swing, your back swing, and downswing independently for about 5 minutes, and do that about 3 to 4 times a week. And I guarantee if you do these things, and you want to make sure you're doing them properly, of course. You don't want to just be, and again, you don't need to swing at full speed. You can use your weighted club if you want a little bit, or I would recommend unless you've got super high ceilings, maybe you've got a vaulted ceiling in your place, I would just use something like a pitching wedge or one of your shortest clubs so that you're not nicking the ceiling, of course, and getting your spouse angry at you. But practicing in the mirror is and there's a lot of great things that you can do as well. And again, if you're working with a teacher professional or aim to connect with one for the new year, they can set you up with some great drills and some things that you can do while practicing indoors with a mirror. Now, the other one here, which is number six, is what I call visit the driving range or your range work. I can't emphasize this enough. I don't care, and I've made no bones about this, I don't care who you're working with. I don't care how talented they are, whether they're ranked number one in Golf Digest or what have you. You cannot improve, unless it's through an act of God, you cannot improve if you don't get out and practice what you've been taught, especially if you're working with an instructor or a coach. You need to get out there and you need to practice. But you need to practice, as I've said many times, and as many of my guests, you need to practice with a purpose. And what I mean by that is don't just rake and hit balls. Get out there and make some games. There's some great games that are out there that you can do. There's a great book, Golf Scrimmages, that Trent Warner, who has been on the show as a PGA professional, and I believe it's golfscrimmages.com, I believe, is the website. Great, great book. Trent has put in a bunch of great games that you can play at the golf course and particularly on the practice area to help fine-tune your game. And if you are working with somebody, a lot of times they will also help put together some fun and interesting games that not only you can use to work on your own game, but when you want to go to the range sometime, maybe you're going to take a buddy with you and you guys are just going to kind of work out together on your game. Instead of just beating ball after ball, you can take some of these games and kind of, maybe see who buys lunch. The winner of this game get so many points. The winner of that game gets so many points. And at the end, you tally up the points and, loser buys lunch. That sort of thing, to make it a little bit more interesting and fun. Most people I know hate going to the driving range. Some people just like to go and hit their driver and see how far they can hit it. But you're really not going to get your best golf out there if you're just going there without a purpose. So make sure you have a purpose. And again, if you're working with a teacher professional or a coach, get them to put together some sort of a game plan for you so that when you go, you're making good use of your time at the driving range. And when you're going there each time, maybe work on a different area of your game. You don't necessarily have to work on the whole game or the full swing every time. You can sort of pick the game apart. Maybe one time, depending on how much time you have during the week, if you're able to go a couple of times, maybe the one time work solely on the short game. Maybe the next time work on some of the other areas of the game. And then maybe if you're really lucky and able to go more than twice a week, then you can kind of put it all and piece it all together. The other thing, too, is try to visualize some realistic situations. For instance, if you belong to a club, as I know many of you do out there, you can go to the range and kind of visualize playing some of the holes. You can kind of use your imagination, hit your driver, and sort of make a tight fairway, if you will, out on the driving range. I always recommend going to one end or one side or the other, either the far left or far right of the range, because usually most of them are, in many cases, might be tree-lined. So what you can do is you've got an automatic out of bounds on your left or right, depending on which side you go. So you can use those to help, and then just again sort of visualize, roughly how wide the fairway maybe a number one is, and just try to keep your drives in there. And then obviously using the greens that are there, again you can use that as your second shot. So you can actually play holes and then keep score, keep track, and say, well, how well I did on getting the ball, on that green and two, or did I take me three shots or whatever, and keep track of that information. Those stats are going to be vital at some point. So practice with a purpose when you go to the range, and don't go there for 2 or 3 hours. An hour is plenty. If you're going there before a round, before you're playing in a game with somebody, you might only have 20 minutes, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. If that's the case, then use that as a warm-up. Don't try to tinker with your swing. Whatever you're taking to the range that day, however you're hitting them, that's what you're going to play with. Don't make any changes. Do that the next time you get together with your instructor, or do that after the round. Work on some of the kinks and get some of the bugs out. The other one is, of course, chipping and putting. When you're indoors, you can chip and putt on your carpet. If you have one. If you don't, then you can maybe get a small area of carpet that you can pick up very dirt cheap, like an area rug that might be an 8x8. And if you've got a rec room, for those of you, especially up in the north area that have a basement, you can maybe go down into your family room down there if it doesn't have carpeting, and you can sort of lay that out there. And there's a lot of different things that you can do just to kind of simulate. And, of course, you don't want to get a shag carpet. You want to get something that's very, very tight. Almost like an indoor-outdoor carpet is probably the best to get. But chipping and putting on the carpet, you can do that. Lots of great things that you can do, especially if you're somebody that is weak in that area. This is something you can do in the off-season. Chipping and putting indoors will help practice those areas a little bit more proficiently, so that when you get back out and able to play out or go to an indoor facility and work on some of your other areas of the game, you haven't neglected that. And one of the great things, which brings me to number eight, which is sort of falls under the putting category, is a one-arm drill. If golf is anything, it's a measurement of consistency. So one of the things that you might want to do is place one hand on your putter and then stroke 5 footers for 10 minutes. You can do this indoor on the carpet, or if you're at an indoor facility, again, if you're in the winter months, or if you're down here in the southern climate where it's a little bit warmer, this is some things that you can do as well. Place the putter in one hand and stroke 5 footers for 10 minutes while keeping the other hand at your side or in your hip pocket. A lot of pros, you'll see them do this before a round, and that just really will help you develop a good putting rhythm. Try it from 4 different directions to the same hole and keep a steady rhythm, which will foster consistency with each of your strokes. So a one-arm drill, and then you can even switch your arms. You might want to start with your, for right-handed golfers, with your left hand and left arm, and then you may want to even do it with your right as well, just to sort of feel that balance. The other thing as well, I don't want people spending a lot of time. I do think it's a good idea to connect with your teacher professional and get them to put you on a simulator In other words, head to the simulator to monitor. We'll get a display. We'll give you your club speed, trajectory and spin axis, launch conditions, distance, and a whole slew of other club and golf ball variables. So helping you get a real feel for your game. This will give a player great feedback. Again, working with a lot of great professionals out there, might have TrackMan or some of the other great products out there. I do certainly agree and believe in doing that. I just don't think you need to overkill it and constantly be on the simulator or on the monitor. But it is a good idea to get some of that information and then discuss it with your professional while you're there. And that was number 9, of course. Was to work with your PGA or LPGA professional and get them to put you on one of their simulators. And if they don't have one, I'm sure that they can connect you to somebody that does, and you can work together on that. But that gives you an idea of getting your numbers. And number 10, of course, is listening to Golf Talk Live every week. We've got some great professionals here, or the Women of Golf show as well. I don't want to leave that one short. Cindy and I on Tuesdays, and of course Thursday evenings, got some great guests on here. This is an opportunity really for you to tune in and listen to some great professionals, both PGA and LPGA professionals, talk about what they do, how they work with their students, and some of the things that they're working on to help grow this game and to make it better for you guys and gals out there. And of course, you can watch the Golf Channel out there. I strongly encourage you. Michael Breed, of course, has the Golf Fix, which helps to work. You can submit questions in that. You can also do that here as well. Always glad to take your questions and calls if you want during the program, during the live broadcast here. So make sure you do that as well. And then actually, I've got an 11th one, which I've briefly talked about here throughout the other 10, and that is I strongly, especially for you beginners, get in touch with your local teaching professional. Go and interview them. Go talk to them. If you've never worked with one before, I strongly suggest that you do that. Maybe get a referral through friends or somebody else that's worked. And go and really sit down and talk with them. Schedule an appointment. Talk to them and say, I'm interested in learning to play this great game, and I want to learn from somebody that obviously has experience. The last thing that you want to do, guys, is listening to your buddies who are struggling themselves and getting some pointers from him or her. The problem that obviously arises is it just ends up messing up your game. So let's do it right from square one. Make that your New Year's resolution. If you're not working with somebody right now, but you do want to get involved in this game, contact your local teaching professional, whether it be, again, PGA, LPGA, or even USGTF, and get out there and communicate with them. Have some goals in mind, because they're going to ask you what your goals are, and make them realistic, of course. But connect with them, get out there and help. Let them help you organize what it is that you want to get out from the game. And it may be just a matter of going out and having fun with your friends. Maybe you play a lot or want to play a lot of corporate events. You don't want to look foolish, so you want to have some lessons. Don't just go for lessons. There's a lot of great professionals out there that offer coaching programs. And it can be very, very affordable depending on what your idea is and what level you want to play at. But there's a lot of great programs out there, and it's a lot more affordable than you think. But I strongly suggest that you do that. And those are really 10 or 11 ways that you can help keep your game fresh throughout the winter months, especially, as I said, for those of you up in the Northeast where it's starting to get a little bit chilly here in the upcoming weeks and months. And maybe you don't have the opportunity to come down south here and play during the winter months. So there's some great ways that you can do, most of which I talked about, you can do indoors. So you don't have to worry about traveling out in the snow. You can do a lot of those things that we talked about. And Brian's, I see he's ready to go. So I'm going to introduce him real quick, and then maybe he might have a few other ones that he might want to share as well when we bring him on the show. So let me just bring up my special guest here. Brian Dobby, of course, has been on the show a few times before. He's a great PGA teach professional, and he works out of the Montclair Golf Club up in New Jersey. So he's well versed in those northern climates, so as I am, and he's going to talk about that, I'm sure. He's been a PGA member since 1994 and a golf professional since 91. Teaching, much like me, for me, is a passion for Brian. He teaches obviously both the mechanical side and the physical side, and has been teaching at Montclair Golf Club for now, as I understand, 14 years. So he's been there quite a while. They also are home to an outstanding junior program that continues to grow each season. That's important for growing the game, and works with all level of players, and they can certainly benefit not only from his teaching side, the mechanical side, but also from the physical side as well, especially some of you older guys out there that maybe don't have the flexibility that we talked about here earlier. You might want to get in touch with Brian if you're up in his area as well. He's also won the 2015 New Jersey PGA Junior Youth Development Award, so obviously he's worked with juniors a lot, and was named by Golf Digest as one of the top teachers in New Jersey. Great guy. Had him on, as I said, the show many, many times, and I look forward to having some discussion with him tonight. So please welcome Mr. Brian Dobby.
Hey, Ted.
Hey, how good evening, Brian. I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Brian?
Ted, I'm doing great. It's good to be back on the show, and our season's winding down here in New Jersey, and the weather's changing, but like you said, there's a lot of stuff to do in the wintertime to prepare for next year.
Exactly. And let's just to keep on that topic here for a second, I don't know how much you were able to listen to before, but I basically had 10 ways that I think are some great ways. And I'll just sort of go down a quick list here, and I won't go through all the explanations again, but just to give you an idea of what we talked about here, if you weren't able to tune in earlier. I really had 10 tips to really help a lot of the golfers out there, because in the winter months, as you know, Brian, up in the Northeast, everybody sort of puts the clubs away, many people do anyways, and they don't see them again until spring. And they really don't focus on their game, and then when they come back out in the spring, many people struggle again, or they're, you know, trying to dust the clubs off and get back into some sort of a routine. And a lot of time has passed. And if you're not, you know, playing or out there working on your game throughout those cooler months, you're basically spending most of the season rebuilding or ingraining some of the memory that you had from last year. So let me just quickly go down this quick list here, Brian, and then I'd like you to share some thoughts and insight as well. The first one, of course, was weights, working with weights. And again, I emphasized about nutting into a heavy weight routine, but working with some weights. Obviously, working on the mental side was number two. A lot of golfers now have started to recognize the importance of yoga. Yoga has become a great way to stretch and work on that stability and core and flexibility. Weighted clubs, that's been around for a long time, but I, again, use caution. Make sure you're not swinging too much weight, and don't try to murder as you would a full swing. A lot of times out there trying to kill the ball, just use a weighted club just to sort of feel the flow and help work on your rhythm and timing. Working with a mirror, I do that all the time, as I mentioned. Range work, of course, I think you would probably agree with that as well. You've got to practice with purpose. Get out there on the range and practice what you're being taught. If you're inside and you can't get out to an indoor facility, you can chip and putt, of course, if you've got a carpet. And if not, get out and buy yourself a cheap section of carpet, and you can chip and putt. I like to do some one-armed drills with my putter as well, which was number eight. And then I also recommend going on a simulator. I don't recommend spending all of your time being checked out on a simulator, but whether it be some of the great ones that are out there, TrackMan and so forth, I think it is important to get that data and information to help you. And then also, of course, last but not least, listening to my program is going to help you, and of course, watching the Golf Channel. So those are the 10 I put together, and of course, number 11 would be to, as I closed out there, working with a professional such as yourself or myself, getting a good program put together. So those are what I recommend. I'm sure you may agree with some or all or none, I don't know, but what do you try to do to help golfers up in New Jersey to improve through the winter months?
Well, Ted, first of all, I was listening to the beginning of your show, and I agree with all your points, and I'll go over them, each one with you.
Sure.
I think you really hit them all on the head here. I think for most golfers, though, that just finished up a season, I think it's important to get away from the game for a little bit just to refresh mm-hmm. yourself.
Right.
And take some time to evaluate your prior season and set some goals for next year. I think that's really important, refreshing yourself and setting goals. What do you want to work on, and how are you going to reach those goals? I think that's important to write that down, and I think if you write it down, it really tends to come to fruition if you set some goals. The second thing, and I'll hit on what you said with your first point, hitting the weights. I think the first thing people should really consider is getting an evaluation first before they start
sure.
any kind of program. And
right.
What I see with a lot of people is they're actually doing things in the gym that can actually hurt themselves. And I think with an evaluation, a trained person in that field is going to be able to find your strengths and weaknesses and then put you on a program that fits your needs. And definitely, you know, in golf-specific training, I think that's really important. So I think injury prevention, Ted, should be the first goal for anybody working out. Trying to get through the golf season without an injury would definitely be a good goal for anyone. Because with an injury, you're not out playing, you're not having fun and stuff like that. So that would go a long way in for that. Number two, you talked about the mental game, and Ted, that's a great point. I don't think a lot of amateur players really consider the mental part of the game and trying to focus and have a goal to play better. And I think that's really important. And if they can sit down and talk with somebody that's in that field, up here we have Dr. Nick Molinari. He's helped me a lot, and I know he's been on your show, but a guy like that can set some mental goals for a student, and that's important. You mentioned yoga. Ted, yoga is great for anybody. It's we all need to get stronger and more flexible, and as you know, golf's a demanding sport. You know, you're out there walking 4 or 5 miles around a golf and swinging that club. It takes a lot of to be in shape for that, and again, you don't want to put yourself in a position where you can cause an injury. You know what I'm saying? So that's important.
Yeah, and let me just back up real quick just before we continue on, Brian. Just I want to touch on something real quick, going back to the previous point about the mental side of golf. You know, as I was sort of alluding to earlier in my discussion, is, you know, Jack Nicklaus talked about in his, if you remember, those of you that watched his video, Golf My Way, he talked about really sort of the breakdown in his golf game where really 10% was really the physical side of the game and 90% was really mental. You know, the reason why he emphasized that is, you know, if you look at Jack Nicklaus, certainly he was a great golfer in that, but if you were to compare him against some of the greats today, his golf swing certainly was sound, but it wasn't necessarily picture perfect like you see some of the young guys like Jordan Spieth and Rory and some of the other ones out there. But his mental strength was so in tune and so superior to really everybody else that was out there playing. That was why he dominated, I think, for so long. And a lot of people, as you alluded to as well, put very little emphasis on the mental side of the game, and they don't know what to do. And that's why, as you mentioned, getting together with someone like Dr. Nick Molinaro and many others in the sport as well that specialize in that can help train and give you some great tips on how to strengthen your mental side of the game. And that's extremely important. And then as you followed up with on the yoga, there's a lot of great yoga instructors out there if you're not familiar with them. One I've had on the show as an example, Catherine Roberts, of course, has been on the Golf Channel many, many times over the years, and it's a very successful program out in Arizona. So that's another one area too as well. There's just so many areas of your golf game that will benefit through a good yoga program.
Sure. I think what you mentioned about Jack Nicklaus, you know, what made him so good was he knew what his strengths were and he played to those, and he didn't let anything get in the way of that, and he was just so consistent. And I think one of the mental things people can work on is their pre-shot routine. I think, you know, visualizing the shot, committing to the shot that you're going to hit is so important, and just executing the shot with no regards to the outcome. I think those 3 points right there would be a good start for most players. That I see them over the ball a lot of times, and they're not committed to what they're trying to do, and that leads to tension and not your perfect swing. So just, you know, routine, visualizing, and commitment goes a long way in that department, Ted.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and I'm like you. I've seen a lot of players, especially amateur players, and I work a lot with corporate, and you know, a lot of times their head's still in the boardroom, and you know, quite often when I'm working with them, I can tell just by the way that they're handling themselves that they're not focusing on what they need. Now, most of the ones I've been working with the length of time, they know I'm going to bust their chops if they're not paying attention. But you know, right. Some of the newer ones that have come along, you know, they're thinking about what, you know, what's going on back at the office. They're, you know, wondering what's maybe that meeting that's coming up a little bit later in the day, and their mind is not really open and ready to receive. And I've actually, and I know this is something that maybe a lot of people wouldn't do, but if I really don't feel that person's in the lesson, I will actually say to them, why don't we reschedule it another time when, you know, you don't have a lot going on? Because there's no point in going through, you know, a 30-minute or an hour or more lesson, especially a playing lesson. And it's not a matter of wasting my time, but it's just a matter of, I know if their mind is not open and receptive to what they're going to be taught or what they should be listening to, it's just a waste of their time. And so I want to make sure that they're engaged. And, you know, I hate to, you know, nobody likes to turn away business, but I would rather them come back when they're in a different mental framework, if you will, than have go through the motions and then it end up being wasted. So obviously I moved on to weighted clubs. I'm not sure how your thoughts are on that. I believe in them to a certain point. I think they're good. But I think, like much like we talked about earlier with the weights, I think you have to be careful. I think you can't just get crazy with it. Some people get out there and grab, you know, two or three golf clubs and start swinging away like they would on the first tee, and that can be dangerous as well. You can be susceptible to injury like that.
Sure.
Your thoughts?
Sure. Ted, I'm going to add two things into that crossed my mind with the weighted clubs. If you're going to use weighted clubs, that's great. It's going to condition your body and stuff, but you have to add in some speed training and swinging something that's much lighter, and mm-hmm. so you can swing faster, I think is important also, because
right.
if we tend to only swing something heavy, we're not teaching our body to move fast, okay? And
yep.
and studies show that we need to do that. So combine the two. And then the other thing I like to tell my students is, you know, if I have a righty student during the winter, I want them making swings left-handed, because, you know, all season long we're making thousands and thousands of swings one way, and our body's getting conditioned to go that way. Mix it up. Try to swing the other way. It's going to help your coordination, balance, stretch out your body in a different pattern that
yep.
you're not used to. And, again, I think it can cut down on injuries because, you know, as you know, moving in one direction over and over can be a strain on the body. So break that up and swing the opposite way during the wintertime. I think it can only help your golf swing and help balance out your body a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brian. You know, let me just one thing I want to add on first here. You mentioned about some speed training. I had a guest on here a few weeks ago, Greg Jones. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not, but he's up in the north as well, and he really emphasizes working with, you know, building your speed as well. And again, he's got some products, and if you go to gregjonesgolfacademy.com, you can certainly see some great products. And I know you probably have some things that you work with as well, Brian. But that's a great point, because a lot of people overlook that. You know, they're swinging the weighted clubs, which is good. But you have to work on your speed. And I like the fact that you, because not a lot of people think about this, but a lot of great players, Tiger has done it, Phil has done it, and some of the other guys, I'm sure a lot of the other pros do it now, where they actually, if they're normally right-handed, they'll swing left-handed just to balance things up. Because you're right, it's not so much the big muscles that really it's going to help, but it's also your stabilizing muscles, which are your smaller muscles in your back and in other areas of your body, that get worked one way all the time, and it creates an imbalance. That's a fantastic idea to do that. So that's something else that you can incorporate under that sort of weighted clubs is the speed drills, which you can find out more about by speaking with your local professional. They can put you in touch with some great drills and some great products that will help you do that, some great products out there. But also getting them to help you, again, whether you're right-handed or left-handed, swing in the opposite direction. Do that throughout the winter months, and to sort of help create that balance. That's a great point, Brian. Thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome, Ted.
And the mirror, of course, I use a mirror all the time. Like I said earlier, it's not just to look at myself and check my hair and all that good stuff. but I like to cut some full-length mirrors at home. I don't know if you have the ability as well where you are, but I use them a lot, just to sort of be able to help, just see where everything, a lot of times I don't always get a chance to get out there and work on my game, sometimes outside for one reason or another. So I like to stand in front of those mirrors and check the different points of my swing, both straight on and down the line and so forth. Is that pretty much the same as what you're talking about as well?
Ted, I agree with you fully on that. I think mirror work is important, and there's so many things you can check. Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is your posture down the line,
yeah.
Just looking at how you set up, and then, as you take the club up to the top of your swing, make sure it's in a good position. That's really important. And from a front view in a mirror, I would definitely check ball position, whether it's with a driver or an iron, making sure you're in a good posture to the ball and have that good ball position. That's really important. And then, again, just getting that club in your hand every day in the wintertime.
Yep.
Maybe you're snowed in or whatever and you don't have a chance to hit some balls. That's better than nothing. And
yep.
Getting that club in your hand, gripping the club, looking at your posture, and you're starting to formulate what your pre-shot routine is and what you're thinking about. I think that kind of gets you in that mindset for golf, Ted.
Right.
Great idea.
And let me just touch on one other thing, too, that's really great. A lot of golfers don't, one of the most important fundamentals, I think, is because it's really the only part of your body that touches the golf club is your grip. And there's a lot of different things that you can do, and there's lots of great diagrams out there that you can follow. And whether you have a neutral or a stronger grip, interlocking or an overlapping grip, really is your own personal preference. And that's something that you have to sort of, feel in your own rhythms. But the one thing that the mirror does that a lot of people don't realize, for instance, when you're working on your grip, you're looking at it from really one view. You're looking at it from a straight-on view. Even in the mirror, you're looking at it as your hands are on the golf club, and that's great. One of the things that you can do with the mirror is you can actually show how the club fits in each of your hands. You can turn, if you're a right-handed golfer, you can turn to the left and put your left hand on. You can see how it fits and how it looks from a side view, because you can't always see that very well when you're looking at it on the golf course. Nat, you certainly sometimes can get into some bad habits. And then conversely, you can turn to your right a little bit, and you can actually see, by looking back into the mirror, you can see how the right hand fits on. So you can actually see and visualize how the grip goes through the fingers and so forth, and how it overlaps over onto the grip. So you can actually visualize different angles that you can't normally see when you're just working on those grips without the presence of a mirror. So that's another great thing that you can use it for. And like you said, Brian, I think that a lot of golfers out there, if they're not able to do some of the other things that we're talking about, just sitting there and working on their grip and their stance and their posture, and maybe just taking some slow, smooth swings in front of that mirror, both front on and down the line and so forth, is a great way to at least ingrain some good patterns throughout those winter months, so that when you get back out in the spring, you're not starting from sort of ground zero again.
Correct. And Ted, the other thing about gripping a club, we don't realize how weak our hands get until we stop playing golf. And
right.
As you know, strong hands and wrists and forearms are so important in golf. But just getting that club in your hand, 5-10 minutes a day, it's going to keep your hand strength up. And that's so important for any golfer, Ted.
Yeah, exactly. And the next one I had on there, Brian, was, of course, the range work. We have to get out on the range. Obviously, a lot of the professionals now prefer to spend more time out on the golf course under real situations, and that's certainly important, and I agree with that 100%. But there are occasions where we've got to get out there and practice some of our shots and different techniques and that, and that's really where you work on the game. And I can't emphasize this enough, and I'm sure you would agree, Brian, a lot of players, especially your high handicappers out there, they'll come to you for a lesson and maybe spend a few moments out in the range, and then, they're not touching a golf club unless they're playing somewhere, maybe until the next time they come in for another lesson. And it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks, depending on the program that you've got them in. And they're missing a lot of opportunities to really work on some of the fundamentals that they're being taught and some of the techniques and the drills and the tips and all these great things that we're spending all of our time trying to instill into them. They're missing those opportunities to practice them. And I believe, I'm sure as you do, you need to practice with a purpose. So why don't you talk a little bit about some of the things that you get your students to do when they're spending time on the range?
Sure, Ted. You know, you hit it, the nail on the head with practicing with a purpose. And I try to get my students to change their clubs more often on the range and also change their targets more frequently. You know, we tend to get into a pattern of hitting one club over and over to the same spot. And I don't think that's how we play the game when we get on the golf course. And, you know, we always hear people saying, I always hit it good on the range, but I never hit it good on the golf course. Well, I think
right.
if you practice like you play and play like you practice, I think that would be a good goal. So, you know, hit two or three shots with a club to a target, and then switch clubs and go to another target and see how that ball's reacting to the target. I don't think enough of that's done when I see students on the range. That's really important. And the other thing I think you mentioned earlier was, you know, imagine some of the holes you're playing and
right.
you know, maybe hit a driver and then switch clubs and pretend you're actually playing the hole on the golf course instead of just hitting ball after ball after ball. I think that goes a long way to working on your routine and trying to make your practice session more like what you're going to find out in the course. And I think that will definitely help you score better when you get out on the course.
You know, one of the things that I used to do, Brian, years ago when I was back up in Canada, I used to play at a golf course, and on the range, of course, the teeing area was very tightly mown, as it should be. But if I would always go to either the far left or far right side, and I would sometimes, and I'm not trying to suggest that anybody do this if the club has strict rules, but a lot of times they may have it on one side or the other, and I would always go where there would be a little bit of a simulated rough area. So there would be the tightly mown teeing area, but then I'd be right near the edge where there was a little bit thicker grass, that hadn't been mowed. And the reason why I did this is for this reason. Again, I would keep in mind if I'm visualizing, say, the first hole, and if I didn't hit the best drive that I could hit, and it looked like maybe it was going right or left or whatever the situation, I would visualize that, okay, I don't have a perfect fairway lie. Maybe it's ended in the first cut or a thicker rough. And I would play my next shot out of that thicker rough. So I would simulate hitting out of the rough. And I would do that several times throughout my practice sessions so that I would simulate real course situations, because you're not going to get a perfect lie. You know, one of the big things, Brian, I'm sure, and I'll let you speak here in just a second, one of the things that a lot of people do when they go to the driving range is they're hitting off perfect conditions every time. Well, that's just not realistic. You know, you're not hitting it off a teed ball every single time. You've only got 18 holes where that can happen, and 18 shots, rather. And the rest of it, it's anyone's guess, depending on where your shots go. So that's what I like to do. What do you like to do sometimes with some of your students when they're on the range to try to create a different scenario each time so they're not just hitting off that perfect lie? Is there something that you recommend that they do to simulate that as well?
Well, Ted, it's funny you bring that up, because at Montclair, the course I play at, Montclair is very hilly. And outside of the driving range, that's probably – We only get an even lie on our tee shots. After that,
right.
It's uphill, downhill, side hill,
yep.
and you get all these crazy lies that you know. So
right.
What I like to do, because our range really can't simulate that, I like to get my students out on the course, and that's
right.
where we'll do most of our work. You know, let's hit this uphill lie, and you know, how's the lie going to affect the loft of the club, and do we need to take more club, aim a little bit more to the right or whatever? And then, you know, with downhill lies, we're going to reverse all that. And that's what makes Montclair so hard, is every lie is just a little uphill or downhill or whatever. And I think if your range doesn't have places for you to simulate that, do some work out in the golf course the next time with your teaching pro, and get out there for a playing lesson and go over
yep.
those shots with your pro, and that's going to go a long way for your average golfers, Ted, in saving strokes on how to set up to those lies, changing ball position, and take the correct club, you know. So that's very important.
Yeah, and there's some great points that you just mentioned, Brian, in that is, you know, again, one of the biggest problems that a lot of the higher handicappers have is they get out on the range, and certainly, you know, you need to be out there, need to be working on different aspects of your game. But if you don't have, conditions like what we just discussed to simulate, then you need to get on the golf course. One of the biggest problems that I see with most golfers, and as you hit on the point earlier about taking your range game out to the golf course, if you're hitting off a perfect lie every time and then suddenly you get out on the golf course and you're in, an inch and a half of rough, suddenly you don't have a perfect lie, and there's adjustments that are going to have to be made. And if you're not used to making those adjustments, you're not going to hit your 5-iron, that happens to be the club that you need, as crisply or as solid as you did when you had that perfect lie back on the range. So you need to know how to make the proper adjustments and the proper changes, but you need to feel how the club reacts in those situations as well. So, you know, again, you need to practice with a purpose on the range, but you need to also practice outside of the range, out on the golf course with your local professional, and practice some of those different simulated shots.
Right. And Ted, I'm going to give your listeners a tip here out of the rough. What I find when I'm out playing with members is typically they're hitting a club that doesn't have enough loft on it to get out of the rough. So in general, add loft to your clubs, get more loft, even if it's not the correct distance you're trying to hit, but more loft to club is going to give you a lot easier time getting out of the rough than a low lofted club.
Yeah, you know, the other thing too, let me just quickly add to that. One of the things I always see, and I know that there are some advantages, but for you club golfers out there that maybe, aren't hitting a solid right now, one of the biggest mistakes I see, and I guess I have to kind of blame a little bit of the industry for doing this, because they've come up with so many different clubs out there, a lot of the different hybrids and things out there. If you can't hit any of those clubs off a perfect lie, then you need to rethink about hitting it out of a not-so-perfect lie. For an example, you know, in a thicker rough, I know some of these clubs are designed to help, but if you're not able to hit these clubs very well with perfect conditions, then you need to work. Those are things that you need to work on while you're on the practice tee and on the driving range areas, because what often happens, and Brian, I'm sure you've seen this as well, people will go out and will buy things because they'll see a commercial or they'll see their buddy using a certain club and think, oh, this is what I need to help in this condition. And they get out there and they don't really understand, number one, the purpose of that particular club or how it actually works and how it's going to help them. And they just think, well, I can go in and I'm going to be able to hit out the rough because the marketing says I can do so. And this is where I think a lot of club golfers go wrong, is they end up buying into something without really fully investigating. So this is where your professional can help you talk about. Those are conversations you need to be having while you're out there working on other areas of your game and say, okay, you know, do I need this club or what's the benefit or how do I use this club, so that you're not going out and wasting money on something that you really don't have all the information on.
Great, great point there, Ted. Yes, I agree totally.
And I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to take task with the manufacturers. I understand that the clubs have a purpose, but I see a lot of people spending their money on things that they could find solutions other ways, at least temporarily. And there's areas of your game that need a lot of work on. And if you're not focusing on those areas, don't just buy a piece of equipment thinking it's going to solve everything without getting all of the information up front. And this is why I can't emphasize enough why it's so important, especially for you new golfers out there. Connect with your local teacher professional. Go in and talk with them. Sit down, and as Brian talked about, and as so many of the other guests, and I will say, go for that early assessment. Get them to discuss things and talk about set goals. And we're going to talk about that here in just a moment, a little more detail, Brian. But you definitely need to go in and have that early assessment. I'm going to sort of skip over this one a little bit. I talked about chipping and putting on a carpet. Those are just little things that you can do inside if you want. Again, also with the one-arm drill with the putter, that's something you can do not just indoors, but I like to do that because it helps, I find, with the feel and the rhythm of the swing. I don't know if that's something that you recommend as well with some of your students with the putter.
Well, Ted, one thing with the putting, I think the winter time's a great time for people to go get fit for a putter. if your club has those capabilities or a local club. But it's one of those things most golfers don't consider doing when they get fit for clubs. They get fit for woods and irons and wedges, but they forget about their putter. And as we all know, the putter is the one club in your bag you're going to use more than any other club. So
right.
The wintertime might be a good day to spend a Saturday, go get fit for a putter, talk to your pros, and just get that done. So when you come out in the spring, it's one less thing you have to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. And, you know, you need to be, and that's something else too. You know, the winter really opens the door for so many things. Number one, especially for those of you golfers out there, whether you're playing up at Montclair or some of the other great courses up in the New Jersey area, if you've been playing all season and your grips are starting to get a little slick and worn out from playing all those great rounds of golf, now's the time in the off season, if you've got a little bit extra time, to go in and get re-gripped for the new year and get them in good shape and make any adjustments that might need to be made. Do it during the off season if you haven't already done so, and get those clubs tuned up. And don't forget the putter, as you just mentioned, Brian. That's one that I know that gets overlooked quite a bit. The putters can be made or get adjustments. And if you have to, if you've got an old putter in the bag and maybe it didn't serve you well through the summer months, you might need to make a new investment, and that's a good one to do. Don't just buy something off the rack. Make sure that you get fitted by somebody that has the experience and the knowledge to fit you properly, and get something that works well.
Sure. And Ted, great point about getting your clubs re-gripped. You know, for the average golfer, twice a year would be good, and sometimes
yep.
your driver and wedges and 7-iron typically wear out more than other clubs, but trying to swing a club that's got a slick grip or whatever, it's just not going to do any golfer much good.
No, exactly. And one of the other ones I talked about, and again, you know, I've been very vocal on the program about not overdoing it, but simulators. There's nothing wrong with going TrackMan and some of the other great equipment out there for getting the numbers. I think it's important for any golfer to certainly be exposed to that. But I use caution as well. I think sometimes people get too caught up in the numbers, and I think even some of the professionals out there get, use the simulators too much with their students, and it does them a disservice. So I certainly agree, and I think whether it be TrackMan or any of the other ones out there that are on the market, I think they're great pieces of equipment. They certainly do provide valuable information. But it's like anything, any piece of equipment or technology has its place and needs to be put in the proper perspective and not overused when trying to help some of the students out there. And share your thoughts on how you feel about that.
Ted, I agree with what you said. It's great information. Technology's really helped us teach with the ball flight laws, so much we've learned about in the last 10 years with all this. But if it becomes a situation where you get obsessed with the numbers and it's getting in your way of playing the game of golf. Remember, golf's about getting the ball in the hole, and I think
right.
a lot of players tend to forget that, and they're into mechanical thoughts and numbers and what
right.
have you. And there's a time and a place for that, but when you get in the golf course, I don't care if the ball goes left or right, high or low, you need to start thinking about how to get it in the hole as quickly as you can, and that's overlooked, Ed. So if simulators and all that technology gets in the way of that, you need to back away a little bit and remember, you know, it's a game, and it's about getting that ball in the hole in the least amount of strokes.
Right. And again, this is not to, and as I said, I've been very vocal about it on the show many, many times, as some of the other guests have as well. They certainly have a purpose, and I think they're great. I think the technology is great, and it's interesting. It provides a lot of useful information for the coach or for the teacher professional, and certainly some of that information can be then in turn relayed to the player. The two things that most hit me that I like to proceed with a little bit of caution is, number one, if the student's being given too much information, it becomes confusing, it becomes overwhelming, and they'll more than likely, now certainly some, there is exception to the rule, but a lot of them will back away because it just becomes too overwhelming. And the other thing is, if the coach or teaching professional is relying too much on the technology and not enough on their own eyes and experience, then they're doing a disservice for their students. Certainly use that equipment, embrace it, use it for the purpose it was meant to, but don't overuse it. And same thing with other products in that. There's great products out there on the market, but again, if anything is used too much during the process, then it sort of it gets to a point where it surpasses its usefulness, and then it just becomes you know. So that's what I have to say on that. And then, of course, the other thing, too, is I always believe in encouraging people to listen to the program. I think, I always enjoy doing these shows every week, and I've got some great professionals like yourself and many of the others that have been on the show, and I think this is a great forum for people to tune in and listen to hear some people in the industry that have been in for quite a number of years and have got some good information to share. So it's a good place to pick up some tips and also to find out, a good professional in your area. This is a perfect opportunity to hear them speak and hear them talk about how they would handle things and be able to share that information with you, the players out there. So this is a great thing, and I put this as my number 10, is to listen to Golf Talk Live each and every week. So that's a little bit of a selfish plug, but nevertheless, I think it's well worth it.
No, Ted, definitely. The other thing to add to that is, you're still watching golf on TV. And
sure.
I think that's so important to see great players play, watch how they handle the game, how do they deal with shots that they hit offline. If you notice, pros just look at the next shot and figure out how to get that in the hole and watch their rhythm, their balance, watch their short game, their tempo with their putter, how they handle themselves on the golf course. There's so much to learn just from watching great players, and I think the wintertime is a good time to catch up on that. And, watch an event one weekend on TV, it can only help, because you're seeing the motion and the rhythm of a good swing, and that's always a good thing, Ted.
Yeah, and the other thing, Brian, just to add to that, is if you have the opportunity, which I have on a number of occasions, to just sort of one better than that, if you have the opportunity to go to a live event, I strongly recommend that you do that. And here's what I would suggest. Obviously, you want to follow maybe some of your favorite players that might be playing, if you can. But here's what I would suggest, three things, actually. Number one, go to the range and watch these guys warm up. See how these guys, and or gals, depending if you're going to an LPGA event as well, watch how they warm up. Watch where they prioritize during their warm-up session. And also see how much time before a round they're really using to utilize that. And you'll be surprised at what a lot of the pros do. The other thing, too, is, again, I know a lot of people want to follow their favorite player, but depending on the skill level of the player, and certainly all high skill level, but if your favorite happens to be Jordan Spieth or Rory or some of the other top guys, or even Tiger, they're going to have big crowds, and you're not really going to be able to get a great view. So here's a tip that I can give you. Always stay ahead of that player. In other words, if they're on the tee, be down by the green, because you can look back down the fairway and you can see their drive. And then when they get ready and get close up to the green, before they've sunk that final putt in, start moving to the next hole and get ahead. The reason why I say that is if you don't, you'll get lost in the mob, and you'll never be able to see any of these players. But number three, what I would suggest really is, and again, this is no, I don't mean this in any disrespect to any of the other players, but sometimes it's better to find a player that maybe doesn't have as big a crowd, and you can get in a little bit closer and actually see what they're doing and how they handle themselves a little better around the course, because you're not sort of lost in the mob. And that's how I always did when I used to watch up at the Canadian Open years ago at Glen Abbey. I certainly like to follow some of my favorite players, but I also follow some of the players that maybe didn't have as big a crowd, just so I could watch and learn from how they handle themselves on the golf course, because I could get a little closer in for sort of that bird's eye view. And that's what I would suggest, too, is go and watch a live event. If you have the opportunity, even if it's only for the one day.
No, that's a great point, Ted. Another thing to consider when you're there, if you get to one of those events, watch how much time these players spend on their short games. I see it all the time. They spend a lot of time on the putting green, working on their alignment, making
yep.
short putts, making sure they're aimed properly, and so much time on their wedges, their chip shots, getting used to the grasses, and their bunker shots. They spend so much time. And Ted,
yep.
you know, we all know how amazing tour players are on TV. You know, they hit the ball unbelievable. But I'm so impressed with their short games. And if,
yep.
if you take the time to study and watch their shots around the greens and how close they hit these shots, to me, that is just a thing of beauty. And that's what turns me on when I watch tour players, how good they are with the wedges in their hand. It's just incredible.
Yeah, let me just throw one more thing out there, Brian, on that note. Back a number of years ago when I was up at Glen Abbey, I was watching, of course, a much younger John Daly come up. And if any of you have ever watched him, if you had the opportunity of watching him warm up, and this, of course, was in his earlier days when he was playing much better than he has been lately. But this goes exactly to what you were just talking about, your point. I remember standing right behind him, and he was on the left-hand side of the teeing area on the practice range, and to the left of that was the putting green. And the tee area was slightly elevated, I would say maybe a couple of feet in elevation change, maybe even 3 feet. And there was a couple of course, you know, holes or pin positions that they had placed on there. And what he did was he had nobody to the left of him, of course, because he was the furthest left, and he pulled out his wedges. And he would literally, if you've ever watched John Daly, he'll take a full swing and then some. And he would just execute these very soft, high landing lob shots that were really no more than 5 feet away from these pin positions, maybe 6 feet at best. And he would just trickle them up to the hole. And I'd never seen anything. I've seen a lot of guys hit. I've never seen anything like that. And it was just amazing to watch, despite having a full swing, how gingerly those balls would just sort of loft up and land on those greens. And he would, again, you know, do that for maybe 15, 20 minutes, one after the other.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing to see, because most of the high handicappers would be panicking in a shot like that, because they wouldn't be able to stop the ball. They wouldn't know what to do. And he would just execute those shots one after the other. And it was just amazing to watch. So definitely go and watch these guys, like you said, Brian, and watch how they handle their short game. I want to talk about, Brian, if we can, because you mentioned this briefly, but I'd like to get into a little bit more detail. As we sort of wind down the traditional season for a lot of the club golfers out there, their thoughts should be obviously doing some of the things that we talked about, but they should also be setting some goals for 2016. So let's talk
sure.
about some of the things that you try to encourage your students to do to get ready for next year. What do you get them to do? Some of it we talked about throughout the winter, but what do you do as far as setting goals? How do you sit down with them or talk to them about getting goals and what they should be really focusing on?
Well, first off, Ted, I think I try to get my students to keep some type of statistics of their rounds during the season. You know, what's your putting average? Is your average more than 36 putts or less than 36 putts? How many fairways are you hitting? How many greens in regulation are you hitting? And how many times are you getting up and down? What's your up and down percentage when you miss greens? And as we know, tour players are right around 66%. They get up and down almost two-thirds of the time. And
right.
If we can set those parameters and then work off of that and set some goals from that. So say if our putting average is over 40 putts around and playing at Montclair, that's a typical number for a higher handicapper player. If
sure.
we can just get that number down to a hole, their handicap's going to come down. And then
right.
Being able to hit more greens in regulation, if we're only used to hitting four or five greens around, let's have a little mini goal of trying to hit more than that each round. And then, as you know, if we're hitting more greens, we're putting for birdie and have a better chance at par. So I think if you set your goals up and have a little gains within the game, lower your putting average, increase your fairways hit, increase your greens and regulation hit, increase your short game percentage, your up and down percentage, those little mini goals within the big will help the big goal of getting your score or your handicap down.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, obviously you have to be cognizant when you're out playing, regardless of whether you're playing at Montclair or you're playing at some other facility. You've got to be respective of not slowing up your round. But I always like to, make sort of short to the point notes on my card or even on another piece of paper, if depending on what it is. But, on my card, I'll put down the number of putts each hole. How many, I'll either use a symbol or I'll make a note as to how many I get greens in regulation at, and then transfer that into, a lot of great programs out there on the internet. You can find all kinds of great things, and maybe even some of the professionals have something they can set you up with a spreadsheet where you can track and keep track of that each time that you get with them and say, okay, let's take a look at your last two or three rounds and let's take that raw data and put it in and let's work out a spreadsheet so that you've got some idea what you're working with. And that's a great way, as you just indicated, to keep track of your rounds as you're going along and seeing where your strengths and weaknesses are. And that really, everybody sort of puts these short-term goals and they say, well, I just want to hit better and I want to do that. And that's great. But there's a lot of data that you can gather throughout the year, especially if you're playing, a couple times a week. That information is very valuable, not only for you as a player, but also for the teacher or coach that you're working with.
Sure, sure. Ted, the other thing with goals is I think players need to have goals for when they're playing. And there's two kinds of goals that I like to focus on. One is the process goals and one is the result goals. And I think most amateurs are always focused on the result goals and not process goals. And I think we need to set a couple process goals when we go play. For example, one might be I'm going to stick to my routine on every shot no matter what, or I'm going to think of things that I can control and not think of things that I can't control on the golf course. That would be a process goal. And I think if we stay more in the process as opposed to the results, players are going to play better. And pros are the best example of that for your listeners out there. They are so into the shot they're hitting. And their main focus is how am I going to play this shot as well as I can, trust myself, with no regards to the outcome. That would be a process goal. And instead of worrying about mechanics or whatever, or this shot's going to be my best round or whatever, stay in the process, and I think that's going to help the result goals down the road.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, we can't emphasize enough, for those of you tuning into the program tonight, we can't emphasize enough the import of setting goals as well. If you're not setting goals and you need to set some longer-term goals and then some immediate short-term goals as well, and it's a good idea, in my opinion, especially if you're working with somebody, to sit down and to have a discussion about what those goals are. As you said, at the end of the season, evaluate the past season, go over some of the strengths and weaknesses, and really set up an action plan to get better. If you don't plan for success, then you're not going to be successful in every aspect of your life. A lot of people just try to wing it, and they come at the end of the season, they maybe haven't had a great season, and they just sort of, they just shovel the clubs aside and figure, I'll start again next year. But they don't really put a game plan or an action plan together. And if they do that, then I think what ultimately is going to end up happening is they're going to have a clearer vision of what they want, and they're also going to be able to articulate to their coach or instructor what goals they have set, what direction they want to go in, and that coach or teach professional is going to be able to help them formulate a game plan that's going to be able to help them achieve those in a much greater rate of success.
Sure, sure. And, Ted, I'm going to give a little tip for your listeners out there in terms of goals. I think one goal for everybody to have is to have more fun out there playing. Golf has its ups and downs, and during the course of the season, we all know we're going to play good at some times, and we're not going to have our A game all the time, but we're going to bounce back from those bad rounds, and it's going to happen. So if we accept it and still try to have fun, even when we're not playing so well, I think you have a better chance of playing a good round after that. But definitely have a goal of have more fun. You're out in the golf course with your friends for 4 hours or whatever. You're on a beautiful golf course. The weather's so nice in the summertime. Man, that's a fun place to be. And if you're not getting that enjoyment out of that round of golf, that's not the situation you want to be in. So have a goal of enjoy it. Have more fun out there. It's a great place to be. Great place to spend an afternoon or a weekend.
Right, exactly. Well said. Brian, I want to give you an opportunity as we get close to wrapping up things here, just to let everybody know. I know that you work out of the Montclair Golf Club, but for those that maybe are not members, want to maybe get in touch with you up in New Jersey, how can they do that if they're interested in maybe learning a little bit more how you can help their game? How do they get in touch with you?
Sure, Ted. The easiest way is to contact me through email. My email address is briandobbypga@yahoo.com. You can always reach me there, or my cell number. I'll give it out. I like hearing from all my students and new students. 908-531-3637. If you're up here in New Jersey in the Northeast and you're looking for a lesson or a fitness evaluation, give me a call. Love new students, and I love all my students. Anyone out there listening, I can't wait to work with you this winter. And Ted, I'll tell you, my best students are the ones that come to me in the wintertime, and they're ready to go in the summertime because we work on fitness and their golf swings. And April comes by fast here in New Jersey.
Yep.
And we're all dying for that warm weather after a long winter. But if you've got some time to spend with a golf instructor or doing some of these things we talked about, you're going to come out of the gates much better than taking the whole winter off. That's sure.
Yeah, just keep in mind, for those of you listening to the program, hibernation is for the bears, not for golfers. So don't hibernate this winter. Get out. There's lots of great professionals up in the Northeast and in the New Jersey area. I know Brian Dobby would be more than happy to work with you through the winter. And that, you're right, that's exactly what they need to do, is don't put away those golf clubs. There's lots of good work. Get them re-gripped if they need it. Get some other things tuned up if needed. If you need a new putter, get out there and get properly fitted. And if you've never been fitted for your regular clubs, now is a good time to do it while you're in the off season and the pressure isn't on. Get it done. Visit your local teacher professional and get them to make sure you're sized up and fitted properly. Particularly for those of you that are out looking to buy a new set, don't just buy them off the rack. Get fitted properly. You'll find you'll get much better results in that. Brian, as always, thank you very much for coming on. And we got to do this again in 2016. And I already talked about this year. You need to reach out to some of your other fellow pros out in the New Jersey area. And I think I'm going to we're going to have the New Jersey Shore on the show one night next year, and get a few of your fellow pros up in the New Jersey area and have them come on the show together. And we'll have some good conversation and talk about some great golf.
Ted, that's great. It's always a pleasure to be on the show with you, and looking forward to doing it again in 2016. And I want to give a big shout-out to the guys I work with in Montclair. Our director of golf is Mike Sterlicher, great golf professional, and the teaching pros I work with, Joe Haggerty, Ben Shade, and David Polchinski. You guys are great, and I love teaching with you at Montclair. So, Ted, I needed to mention them. They make my day great, and I love working with all of them.
Well, maybe what we'll do as well, Brian, is maybe we'll get the group of them on the show together from Montclair, and we'll talk about some of the great things that you're doing up there. And next time we'll get into more. I know we didn't touch on it really that much this time, but I know they've got a great junior program up there. We'll talk a little bit more about the junior program when you come on next time. But, Brian, thank you very much, as always, for coming on Golf Talk Live. I appreciate your support. And I know, as I've said many, many times on the show, it's not always easy. Sometimes, all of us are very busy during the day, and a lot of you guys up there just are just grinding and grinding every day trying to help grow this game. And I appreciate you giving of your time in the evening like this when you need to spend it with your family. So thank you very much for giving of that time and sharing with my audience.
You're welcome, Ted. Anytime. Appreciate it.
All right, Brian, thank you very much, and you have a great, great weekend.
You too, Ted. Thank you.
All right. All right. Bye-bye. All right, that was my very special guest, Mr. Brian Dobby, from the Montclair Golf Club, a great PGA teacher professional. And as I said, we'll have him on again next year, talking about some golf and some great things that they're doing up at the Montclair Golf Club. And for all of you members that might be tuning in tonight at Montclair, if you need to work on your game this winter, if you haven't already contacted Brian, you need to reach out to Brian and his other staff there and just work on your game this winter. Don't just sit in the chair or on the couch and kick your feet up. Get out there, and there's things that you can do in the winter, as we talked about tonight. I want to take this opportunity, of course, to thank all of the listeners worldwide for faithfully tuning into Golf Talk Live each week. I certainly enjoy and get a great amount of pleasure and enjoyment of having a number of highly talented coaches, teacher professionals, and authors, entrepreneurs stop by the show. It's really through their participation and guest appearances that help to make Golf Talk Live a first-class show. A special thank you to some of the sponsors and supporters. Jonathan Laird from South Coast Golf Guide. Go to southcoastgolfguide.com and ask to get your copy of the guide. It's a great publication. Jonathan is a great leader in the media in this area, in the southeastern part of the United States, with his golf guide. Lots of great courses in there if you're planning on a trip, either short-term or even long-term, if you're coming down to spend the season throughout the southeastern part of the United States. You want to get a copy of the South Coast Golf Guide. It's got some great courses in there. Lots of other good information as well. So go to southcoastgolfguide.com and you can get a copy of that through the website as well. Also Meredith Kirk from Meredith Kirk Golf, go to meredithkirk.com and lots of great information. She's a great teacher professional, but she was also the 2014 Mrs. South Carolina winner, and a great young lady and very, very busy in junior golf as well. She's got a great organization, juniorgolfexchange.org is the website. You can visit and learn more about how you can help some youngsters get involved in the great game and how you can get them fitted up for some clubs. Nikki and Tiffany Litherland, thank you very much for all of your hard work as well and supporting the program. I appreciate it very much for helping spread the word. Mr. Bernie Pinder, speaking of great putters, ontickgolf.com. Visit ontickgolf.com and Bernie will fit you up and size you up for a great putter. One of the best I've seen in the market. So go to ontickgolf.com and reach out to Mr. Bernie Pinder, the owner, and he'll be more than happy to size you up for a new putter if you're needing one this year. Mr. Sean Kelly, of course, owner of linkedgolfers.com, a great new website that's been out now a little over a year. Sean, of course, was the manager of the Linked Golfers in linkedin.com, which is the largest golf group on the social media site. A lot of great professionals, not only teacher professionals, but people in the golf industry and enthusiasts alike. He's brought that forum out to more of a public, linkedgolfers.com. Make sure you check that out as well. Mr. Sean Kelly, thank you for your continued support. And, of course, Mr. Peter Doyle from Doyle Golf Solutions, my good buddy over in Ireland. Great teacher professional as well as a club fitter. Make sure that you look for him as well, Mr. Peter Doyle from Ireland. Thank you for your continued support. And I will see you next Thursday right here on Golf Talk Live at 6 p.m. Central. God bless everybody and have a great week.